very good Friday indeed for Norwich City. 7 straight Carrow Road wins, which has solidified their place in the top 6 for now, ahead of what is a daunting week of Championship clashes. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich. In this podcast, of course, to make it Easter related, it's like that last Easter egg you can't quite find in the hunt that's been left just in a pot there, and it's slightly melted, but you still open it up and it's full of chocolatey goodness. And joining me, as ever, is Paddy Davitt to my left, Samuel Seaman to my right, to reflect on a 2-1 win for Norwich City. Hard fought, different type of win to maybe the one against Stoke and Rotherham, Paddy, but a job well done for Norwich City at Carrow Road this afternoon.
Well, it's big, feels big. We're just a few hours after the final whistle, walked up the hill, and for long spells, you know, nearly an hour separated Morgan Whittaker's 10th minute opener and Just Sargent's, I think it was 67 on the clock, equaliser. Wasn't sure we were going to be discussing what in the context of the season could be massive, you know, because you see what it's done now to the dynamic in terms of either side of the top six line there, allied to West Brom drawing at Millwall and Hull dropping points and, you know, Borough, I think, only got a draw at Southampton. Good result, though, that was in isolation. But, you know, what could have been a... Well, they've probably blown that insurance that we got into in depth on the last podcast at the Fat Cat, in terms of how the run-in looked and what the state of play was. All that probably would now be framed very differently if they hadn't done what they did, which was to dig deep when they wasn't particularly playing well in terms of fashioning chances. I think in the second half, it's safe to say, 2 goals from 2 corners. But they found a way. And, you know, as David said after the game, you know, if there was any, certainly not him, but if there was any still doubt in the resilience or the character or even the quality in this group, I think you saw evidence of it today because, you know, at various parts this season and maybe David Wagner's tenure as a whole, that's the type of game they wouldn't have got that result. They wouldn't have dug it out. So it does scream, yeah, this is now sustainable, this is different, and they're here to stay in terms of that top six race. You know, they're going to take some shifting now. And yes, I know Coventry, who are now 7th, have a game in hand, but 4-point gap now to Norwich. There really is no margin for error now for those clubs below Norwich because of what Norwich have done and did today, which was to, in circumstances that weren't favourable, having conceded early as they did, they managed to turn it around. And, you know, it just sets up quite a mammoth couple of games on the horizon now, which we'll get into in due course. But, you know, today was, it felt big, and it, because it answers questions that maybe were still lingering from that pre-festive spell, which we don't need to reopen that discourse. But it felt like that David Wagner probably wasn't going to be at this stage overseeing what is very clearly a full-on promotion push.
Indeed, and for those watching on video as well, we it looks like we've kind of done that. You know, when people interview politicians and they don't show up and they empty chair them, it looks like we've kind of done that. He's professional as he is working in the background. So we've got a picture of Grant Holt in, that was the first Premier League season back, wasn't it? I'll tell you what I always wonder, just this is completely unrelated note, about that team. Whatever happened to Mark Tierney? Just no trace of him anywhere. Don't know what he does. I'd love to know. So if anyone knows what Mark Tierney is doing out, but maybe cartwheeling in his spare time or something along those lines. But yeah, I'd love to know. I don't know what's happened to him. Anyway, Sam, back to the game. As we kind of spoke about there, you take the wins before the break, a 5-0 win over Rotherham, who I think could get relegated mathematically on Monday. Could have done today, but I think they've survived. There were loads of kind of permutations around that. We're at permutation stage of the season, which is always good fun. But Stoke as well, which was a brilliant win in terms of the way that they played and the attractiveness of it. This was very different because, and I actually felt Norwich played better in the first half in terms of you look at the chances they created. They probably created more in the first half than they did in the second, but they were more ruthless in the second with obviously those two set piece moments. But the way that they've won today in terms of coming from behind with the character and everything that kind of creates, there is maybe I probably feel slightly more satisfied today with that win, but maybe that's just me. But I'm sure there'll be a lot of Norwich fans who left today probably feeling a lot more, maybe even positive about this Norwich City side because it's shown that face at this stage of the season in what Paddy says is a massive game.
Yeah, I think the importance of it is that it came in the midst of some good performances. I think there can be a sort of oversimplification of this sort of cliche that, you know, good sides win when they're not playing at their best. And I think it's often actually an indicator that things are about to go downhill. But when you put it in the context of how good Norwich have been in the last few weeks, I think you can actually accept a performance like this and see the positives in it rather than worrying about the permutations, to use that word. There might be from here and the progressions that this type of performance might mean. But I don't think a lot of that is to do with themselves or how well they play today. I think you have to give credit to Plymouth because, yes, they're in and around that relegation fight and they aren't at the right end of the table. They haven't been getting especially good results, but perhaps that's why they were so motivated and so well drilled to try and get a good result at Carrow Road. And they came very close to it. They might even have deserved a draw on balance because I think, especially in a counter-attacking sense, there aren't many teams since Norwich completed this sort of turnover that have given them as many defensive problems as I think Plymouth did today. They've obviously got some very good players in there, chiefly Morgan Whittaker, who obviously scored his 20th championship goal of the season. I think he's got 27 goal contributions in total, which is an unbelievable amount for a team that's where they are. So, yeah, I think Norwich were made to sort of grind it out a little bit by the type of performance that Plymouth produced. It did feel a little bit like a team that had just come off an international break, and I think you could tell that the players who either had been in international action or had spent that period doing fitness work, I think you could maybe tell by the lack of sharpness in those players, thinking about Marcelino Nunez and Josh Sargent probably the most. But it looked like a team that maybe wasn't at its peak. It looked like a team that, as I said, was playing after an international break, especially given obviously this game is on the Friday and has come quicker than the most games after those breaks come. There were a lot of elements against Norwich today, and I think it will be really, really satisfying for that dressing room going in there and knowing that they've ground it out. And I'm sure they won't be keen to repeat that, and they won't think that it's replicable against all of these seven teams that they've now got to play before the end of the regular season. But I think in isolation, for now, with the points on the board, they'll be very pleased with it. And I think it's good to see that they can grind it out because, you know, and I am skipping ahead a little bit here. Of course, there's plenty of work to do. But if they do get into that top six, you look at three games against teams that, you know, if they want to get promoted, three games against teams that probably will have finished higher than them in the league, may well be better teams than them, and they're going to have to find ways to do it. So I think showing again that they have got those characteristics is definitely a positive, and you can forgive it given the context of how good they've been performance-wise in recent weeks.
And what this win does for them is it means that that East Anglian derby at Carrow Road next Saturday, not to skip too far ahead, but it means that Norwich City will be in the top six for or ahead of that game. Obviously, what could happen afterwards, we'll go down that road maybe a little bit later on. But Paddy, today it was about patience, it was about frustration, and it was interesting sort of towards the end of the first half. I felt a little bit of frustration just crept into the fans and probably into the players as well. They started forcing a lot of stuff that they didn't need to beyond that science chance that they had towards the end. But they remained calm, they stuck at it. And as I said, second half, I don't think that they kind of replicated the levels of performance, but also the chance creation that they had in that first half. But as Sam said there, good teams find a way to win games, and it doesn't matter how you do it. And I guess this shows maybe the value of set pieces and set piece coaching, I guess, to an extent as well. It was interesting that David Wagner and Sam McCallum, who I spoke to post-game, were both very quick to praise Andy Hughes. And I know there's some analysts and whatnot behind him as well who helped with that. Only Cardiff have scored more goals than Norwich in the Championship this season from set pieces. It's said it, when you have games like this, when the margins are so thin and when they're so slight, and I don't know, maybe you're having a slight off day in front of goal as Norwich City were, certainly in that first half, it doesn't half help having that in your attacking arsenal, does it, to have that set-piece quality that Norwich City have at this moment in time?
Well, it's won on the game today. That's the top and bottom of it. I can't think of too much else that they create. Sara's later free kick, which thundered against the bar, and then Ashnak headed the follow-up over, but as their keeper had to do too much else in terms of shot stopping, not for me, not in that second half. So it's, I don't think it's a stretch to say that their prowess, and that stat you quote is very telling, you know, 23 teams in the Championship and only Cardiff have scored more set-piece goals. It's, you know, it's testament to maybe from pre-season onwards at the work that they've done. You know, obviously he wasn't on the pitch today, but you have players like Shane Duffy, for example, with his aerial presence, and also the quality of the delivery, and both Fashnacht for the first goal, Sara, we all know about his delivery, Nunes possesses that as well. So you look at those players, you look at the dynamics within the squad, and they probably should be producing a sizeable quantity of goals from set pieces. But yeah, as both David and Sam referenced, you know, it does come down to repetition and coaching and the quality of the coaching to clearly assess. You know, I think, Sam, you said on the way up that conversely Plymouth in the Championship are probably as bad as there is at conceding goals from set pieces, but you've got to know these elements and then bring them together. And then, of course, like every piece of coaching that goes on in the build-up to a performance, it's then about the players when they go across that white line that they can execute. And in two key moments in a game that was, at that point, you know, that was 15 minutes more, in fact, wasn't it? 20 minutes after half-time. It didn't really threaten, didn't feel to me that they'd really changed the dial and that the game was tipping back towards Norwich in that period after half-time. So, you know, you have to feel that if they hadn't done what they did from set pieces, would they have got back in that game today? So, massive. And moving forward, when it is so knife-edge, the games, and particularly if it got to playoff football, that just could be the difference. You know, we go back to a David Wagner's Huddersfield that navigated a path through the playoffs and won at Wembley. I don't think, I mean, was there that stat? Did they score a goal?
They didn't. There was an own goal.
No.
Yeah, they didn't score a single goal in that playoff campaign.
So, you know, that just shows you how fine the margins are and that the ability to be both attacking set pieces but also defensively as well. In when you get to this end of the season, that could tip the balance, because it isn't always about, and it was evidenced today, it can't always be about what we saw the last game prior to the international break, which is that free-flowing, almost joyous expressions of how good these players are individually and collectively in terms of the goals they scored at Stoke. It will be probably more often than not going down the stretch now, afternoons like today, where they have to grind it out and it isn't really about how good they are in terms of their quality, but how effective they can be. And today they clearly were very effective in those set piece situations.
Yeah, and they're interesting one from a set piece perspective, because there's lots of elements to this. But you know, I remember being a player at not a very good level, but having to almost like practice set piece, and you shrug, and it's boring, it's repetitive, and you don't want to do it. So finding ways to keep players disciplined and concentrated and switched on enough, I guess, to take in the information is one thing. But the fact, and Sam McCallum alludes to this post-game as well, it's now the variety of kind of routines that you have to come up with because of the analysis that other teams do. If you do the same thing, you get found out pretty quickly. So it's almost like you can't have one set piece that is just there ready to go. You actually have to have 3, 4, 5 or 6 ready to go every single time, and then you have to take a view on which one to go. And I don't know the exact stats around this, and maybe it's one for Ben Lee, who writes some tactical pieces for us, but the sheer amount of contacts that Norwich seem to win at the near post from set pieces, Sam, is remarkable. Kenny McLean often peels off into that area. It was Sam McCallum for the second goal. Josh Sargent obviously peeled off there for the first goal today. But in general, and again, I've got nothing to compare this to and no stats at hand to bring you, but it feels like they tend to win a lot of those first contacts at the front post. And if you can do that and flick it into an area, you obviously have the situation like they did for the second goal, where either it comes off someone and goes in, or it's in a hell of an area for someone else, Shane Duffy, other central defenders or other players, Ashley Barnes, to go and attack. So the way that they kind of set up set pieces as well feels quite clever, I would say.
Yeah, I think one thing I've noticed is that it really takes the opposition players out of it, that often will intercept those set pieces or nullify them. Obviously, some of the worst corners and the most irritating ones to watch when you're watching football are the ones that are either headed clear by the man at the front post or caught by the goalkeeper. And I think the fact that they've got someone going in there at the near post takes both of those options out of the way. There are actually a few corners today that I watched and thought, oh, that's a poor corner, that's going to get caught. And then you always have somebody jumping in there, intervening before either of those things can happen. And that's pretty much exactly what happened for that goal that you referenced. And I think that is definitely a weapon that a lot of teams would love to have in their arsenal. Norwich clearly have the players to do it. They have the coaches to work on it as well. But, you know, it wasn't just the maybe more standard goal that was obviously the winning goal, but also quite a clever set piece for the equaliser as well, where Fastnacht, to be fair to him, you can have the idea and Sargent can make the really good run as he does, but the area that Fastnacht has to put it into there is pretty small, and he's had to be really precise with it. So two good goals there, one maybe a little bit more physical, a little bit more standard from a set piece point of view, but still an impressive one, and the other actually just really intelligent. So yeah, I think, as you referenced, there is obviously a lot more analysis going on, a lot more work on the fine margins. And in this current football world where it feels like everyone's getting better, everything's getting sort of closer together in terms of the quality, things are done on such fine margins. And if you can add just those little things, it can really, really help you out. I think if you took set-piece goals out of Norwich's games this season, I mean, it would take a lot of calculation, but they probably wouldn't be close to this playoff race. So although it maybe isn't the most fashionable way of scoring goals, when you look at a lot of the fluid football that a lot of teams are trying to score, it's something that they've added that maybe they haven't had when they've had those more technical, more slow possession-based teams trying to attack with. So yeah, I think that's another string to their bow, and that speaks to probably the diverse range of qualities they've got in that group and in that team. And yeah, long may it continue, because that's the sort of thing that stands you in good stead in a lot of games. And whereas, you know, without wishing to compare too much, and in a sort of Daniel Farker situation, if Norwich were 1-0 behind and they got a corner, you kind of thought they may as well chip it back to whoever's on the halfway line and try and build from there. Whereas now, that sort of visceral roar that comes from a football ground, in this case it's normally the Barkley end when the ball goes out for a corner, that feels justified for once in with the Norwich City team, because they have made that a real skill, added that to their arsenal, and yeah, you saw the rewards of that pay off today.
Yeah, and today documents why they're so important, as I think both you guys have said, because it's all very well and good having the quality that we saw at Stoke and against Rotherham, and you know, unbelievable strikes from range. But in those games where those moments are few and far between, you need something to twist it. And this set pieces and the margins that they create, I mean, as we said, it's been the difference today between 3 points for Norwich City and no points for Norwich City. And that documents, today documents why they're so important and why you have to spend so many hours on them, even if they're boring as a player to go through all the time. And just on this theme, Pat, actually, before we go to this theme, Ian Foster post-match, where are we putting him on the rating of saltiness this season? Are we putting him on the Liam Rossini and Kieran McKenna end of the scale, or Danny Royal? I mean, he seemed maybe to be edgy.
He was obviously
the best end of it. I'm using it as a spectrum. You know, he's obviously the best example. And then are we edging him slightly more towards Rossini and McKenna of this world?
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, he wasn't directed at Norwich per se. If I think back to the McKenna performance post match at Portman Road, he was basically zeroing in on the referee, and I'd imagine the FA maybe tapping him on the shoulder at some point in the coming days, because it was quite the outburst. I mean, he was premeditated. You know, wasn't he just a throwaway line? He started his answer with, I felt that referee, well, I'm paraphrasing now, but referee was going to be a problem for us in the second half.
You're not going to do the Scouse accent?
No, definitely not, no. But and then went on to zero in on two incidents in particular. He obviously got booked as well for presumably his vocal encouragement from the sidelines, to which he replied he'd never seen a bench like Norwich's mithering the officials for decisions all season. So they
should have seen Bielsa's leads, by the way.
Well, there you go. So, but he particularly was unhappy with the official over the what he deemed to be the Angus Gunn, was it Divine, was it, incident?
Yes.
Where there was a, it felt like, and that's clearly how the official felt, because he yellow carded the Plymouth player, that it was simulation and that they were trying to entice a penalty from Angus Gunn as he initially started in the box and then veered out as Gunn came to confront him. The Plymouth boss was adamant that should have been a penalty. And then just that little episode prior to the corner that Fastnacht delivers for Sargent, which was, I think, one of their players has gone down in a challenge at the near post. And it would seem that it was the official's decision to bring the physio on from Plymouth. And in doing that, of course, then the player, I think the regulations are that player then has to, there's no debate. They have to leave the field of play and then come back on when they're allowed to do so. And of course, in the intervening period, that's when Norwich scored the goal. So, yeah, safe to say he was very unhappy with the performance of the official. And I'm sure the officials, or rather the FA, will be very unhappy with those comments, because it wasn't couched in any kind of general terms about, you know, the... Often you get that from a head coach after the game, and it's caveated with, I know how difficult their jobs are, and they're all human and we all make mistakes. There was none of that. It was just a full-on, pretty much inferring that it was the referee who decided the outcome of the game today. So, yeah, I might be just keeping a weather eye on the FA disciplinary social media accounts in the next few days for what would feel probably a tap on the shoulder.
7 yellow cards as well, I think they got. Yeah. That feels like sort of fine territory, and a lot of those were pretty cynical as well, particularly in the first half. I mean, I think you'd have got not that I'm a betting person, but I think you'd have got pretty good odds at half time on a Plymouth red card the way that they were going, but it didn't transpire and they spread them out evenly. Sam, we've got to speak about Josh Sargent again, haven't we? I think it's 9 goals in a row at Carrow Road, and he's the second Championship player ever to go on a run like that at home. I think Chubarak Pomand, someone else who I've forgotten, has achieved that previously. Didn't think he was necessarily at the top of his game today, but it's a testament of a good striker, isn't it? You keep plugging away and eventually you get an opportunity, and probably maybe was the hardest chance that potentially he had to score, and that was the one that he did manage to find the back of the net with.
Yeah, I think he probably felt a great deal of relief in that moment because, yeah, he had struggled up to that point. There was a sort of miscommunication with Scythe when the ball ended up slightly behind him, I think, at the end there. There was obviously the chance where the corner fell to him and then it was deflected onto the post. There were a couple quite early on where actually it felt like feeding Jack Stacey on the right would have been the better option, and he chose to shoot and nothing came of those. And I think there were probably 3 or 4 more chances that I didn't mention there. So, yeah, not his best afternoon ratio-wise in front of goal. But... yeah, as you said, you keep plugging away, and eventually a striker of that quality, given the service, which he was, of course, will find the goal. And it was a very, very good finish. I think maybe that's the sort of finish you want if you're somebody who's struggled maybe in the game, because it was very instinctive. The ball was moving fast. He had to almost just let his body do it without thinking about it too much. Whereas you felt that maybe if he had 3 or 4 seconds through on goal to think about it, that the missed chances previously might have affected his confidence. But yeah, I think he came up with the goal just when it was needed. I remember saying to Adam at half time, I said, I think if Norwich get a goal before 70 minutes, I think they'll go on and win this. And after 66, 1-0 down, it felt like even if Norwich were to get a goal, it had to come really, really quickly for them to have a good chance of going on and winning the game. And you just felt the atmosphere completely change when he scored that goal. And then obviously very shortly afterwards, I think 7 minutes afterwards, they had the winning goal in the end. So, yeah, that goal was absolutely huge in their season. Really turned things in a big, big way. And everything we're talking about regarding the importance of those 3 points will be thanks to that goal at that vital time. And I think that's what the top teams have, is that when they're 1-0 down, when they desperately need a goal, when every game is important, you have a striker who you trust to come up with the goals at the vital moment. And you look back at the recent history of Norwich strikers, they've probably got Grant Holt and Tamer Pukki, and then you've got Josh Sargent, who is going right into that bracket as somebody who you feel pops up with the goals whenever you need them, really. So maybe not his most clinical display. I'm sure Narcis Pelac will have him looking at plenty of clips from today's game and seeing where he could improve. I also felt he lacked maybe a little bit of that sharpness when he was on the ball, got shrugged off the ball maybe more than he normally does. But I think that's understandable given, obviously, he's not been training much since he came back from injury. He's been almost just feeding off the matches and getting that match fitness off that. He's now had nearly 2 weeks without a game, and I think it's understandable that he wasn't really at his best. But he's one of few players that could miss that many opportunities, that could struggle for as long as he did and still get left on the pitch when you're searching for a result. And I think David Wagner got proved right in that situation. Not that it would have been a popular decision to take him off the pitch, But yeah, he fulfilled that role of your reliable striker that comes up whenever you need him, and that's what I think most teams pushing for promotion really need. So yeah, as with the set pieces, long may it continue, and I'm sure for the short term at least it will do.
Yeah, I mean, you said the goal that could define their season. I mean, I just wonder, two other moments, Paddy, that certainly define this game and, as Sam said, could eventually come to define their season. The miss from Ryan Hardy at 1-0 where he rounds Angus Gunn. And it's quite a tight angle, but as I said in my verdict, we had Dean Ashton, not Dean Smith as I called him in my verdict, Dean Ashton behind us, and he's a striker who's played for England, and he was talking about how horrendous a miss it was. So I'm entitled to take his view over mine. That felt big, but then equally Hardy again in the second half at 2-1 was played through, and once again Norwich are indebted to Angus Gunn with a massive save at a massive time in a massive game.
Well, do you know what that reminded me of? Because almost identical was the moment. All right, don't steal me thunder. Yeah. Was it Casey Palmer? Yeah. I think it was. Yeah. The game was level at that point, I think, and even though Coventry had a man sent off by then, but that River End, that channel, and just the speed. The speed is off his line, the frame to smother that with any part of his body. There was another one. I mean, obviously, that was the standout moment. There was one where Whittaker cut past Sam McCallum and smacked one on the angle, and he just stuck out a leg. It might be just a big toe, but yeah, I mean, you know, we feel like we say it often, don't we, that we might be biased, but name me a better keeper in the Championship. And when the dust has settled, if they're in the playoffs, I'd love a piece of analysis that would forensically go through all the games, all these types of moments, and how many points that probably has converted into that he has saved on, because, you know, it's he's an indispensable cog in this machine. And we'll worry about the summer and contractual statuses and what that may bring. But in the here and now, They don't probably beat Coventry that day. They probably don't beat Plymouth because of those moments. And you know, of all the elements that need to come together for a successful promotion push, having a keeper as good as him is definitely top of the list, I'd say.
Is he as important as Josh Sargent is for this Norwich team for you?
Yeah, I mean, you can say you slice it, isn't it, really? I mean, you could probably say they're on a par, really. You know, one is the main goal threat, one is very much, you know, the man who keeps him out at the other end. So it's probably unfair to in that context to try and pick one over the other. Suffice to say, they are, as a pair, definitely the most pivotal players in this 11. Because we've seen it in periods of the season, you know, both out injured, coincided with really quite prolonged downturns, and I don't think it's a coincidence that since both have come back, obviously more so Sargent maybe, that they've now got that consistency in terms of performance, and with that results. And you know, good players, you get enough good players in your side, you probably stand a fair chance of being able to achieve something. So yeah, long may it continue. But in an ideal way, in the greatest way of saying it, if he was pretty redundant between now and the end of the season, you'd prefer that, because that would probably mean Norwich are in the ascendant most weeks. But I don't want to jump ahead, but you would imagine Leicester and Ipswich in the next two, he's probably going to have to earn his corn again. So it's great that he's in domestically, certainly. I know there was one or two pointing fingers, maybe the heavy defeat Scotland had out in Holland. I didn't see that game, so I can't really pass comment. But there's absolutely no doubt in an Norwich shirt, he is peerless.
Yes, he is, and majorly important as well. And it is the case, Sam, isn't it? You know, you've got a striker at one end who is valuable in terms of providing goals, and one at the other end who's vital in terms of keeping them out. And I mean, you said about him being a bit busier today. He's kind of had two weeks off, hasn't he, with Rotherham, where I don't think they had a shot, did they? Or maybe they did have one, but I don't think they had a shot on target. And then Stoke as well, where he wasn't tested majorly. There was one shot that hit the post, wasn't there, yes, from memory, but I don't think he was tested that much. So I think, you know, the fact he's more involved today is not necessarily a bad thing. But again, it's what he provides from a defensive perspective, because if you're a defender and you know you've got Angus Gunn behind you, I mean, I can imagine that, particularly for someone like Jakob Sørensen, but all of them really, I can imagine that really gives you a real sense of confidence as a defender.
Oh, definitely. I mean, obviously they'll want to avoid mistakes as much as possible, but it probably takes a layer of pressure away from them. There's not going to be the sort of panicked defending that maybe having a pretty poor goalkeeper will cause, and on the ball as well, he's always been an important part of how they've built up. You know, he's one of these keepers that without maybe having the world-class ability that an Edison or an Alisson has to just chip the ball into sort of the final third and find a player in space that way, what he does have is the nerve that's really, really important if you're going to try to suck teams in and trying to make them press you to then leave that space in behind. And he is still capable of finding those passes. I remember when Tim Krul was in goal, you used to see a lot of those chip balls out to the fullbacks fly out for throw-ins, and it felt like there was more of an error in him. But for some reason, it feels, well, for some reason I say, but because of the ability that he's got and because of the lack of mistakes we've seen from him on the ball, it feels like there's more of a trust in him from the Carrow Road crowd when he's on the ball. And I know there's probably always going to be a little bit of murmuring when goalkeepers take their time and when the team plays out from the back, when they're under a little bit of pressure. But I don't get the sense there's the same level of anxiety when he's on the ball that maybe there has been with previous goalkeepers. So I think that's an important part of it. The defenders know that they can rely on him to find them with the passes. And, you know, as you said, really, when you've got a goalkeeper like that behind you, it just takes the pressure off a little bit, just gives you the sense that even if you do make a rare mistake, that it's probably likely the goalkeeper bails you out. And he keeps surprising me every time a player goes through on goal. It always feels like they're going to score. But
I actually said goal, I think, when
it
Hardy...
It felt so much like it was... He was in a fantastic position. He opened the ball up. I don't even think it's too bad of a finish from Hardy. It looks like he's curling it right into the far corner. But yeah, just somewhere, Gunn's leg sticks out and he makes an unbelievable save. So yeah, he's done that a few times. His importance is undeniable. And yeah, as Pad said, I think he'll be called upon probably quite a lot, especially if Norwich end up reaching their playoff goal. But yeah, you can't improve on him if you're Norwich and just savour him while he's here, because I'm sure there will be bigger clubs looking at him. Hopefully he can go up to the Premier League with Norwich, but if not, it feels like he will be back at the top level before long anyway.
Finally then, Paddy, to close off this part, what was more impressive for different reasons, the free kick that Gabriel Sarr didn't score or Christian Fashnak's miss?
Well, I think you're being harsh there, Connor, because I saw a replay back and the revolutions, the power the Brazilian maestro has put on that ball, it was travelling back off the bar. And the angle I saw on the replays, in all seriousness, I think it just bounced right towards him. I think he did have to. I don't know what you're smiling for. You're clearly feeling that's a bit of a boo-boo, but I'm not, because understandably it looks like he's got an open goal, but I think if you were to watch it back, you would see that it isn't quite straight at him. You know, he's had to adjust his body, and then the pace, as I say, on the, which was a tremendous free kick, the power when it's rebounded off the bar, I'm going to cut him some slack there. So whatever your original question was, because I've forgotten now, but certainly I wouldn't be digging out Mr. Fashnak on that. And obviously, you know, without him, they don't score the equaliser. So I think you need to retract your initial statement when you said it was the worst miss you'd ever seen or something like that in real time. So yeah, not for me, no. But you go on, you're going to tell me different.
No. I was asking the question. It's a shame that Sarr one didn't go in, because that was, yeah, I think probably the best free kick I've seen not scored, if that makes sense. That was incredible. I haven't seen the Fashnak one back beyond initial real time, but yeah. It did seem a bad one, but maybe it wasn't. We'll be back in a second anyway, part two. We're going to obviously look ahead to Leicester and Ipswich. We'll do Bring the Heat and all that good stuff. We'll see you in a mo. Welcome back. You're listening, stroke watching, to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich, of course, producers of the very finest mustard in the land. We're feeling particularly, I don't know, do you say festive at Easter? Yeah, I think you do, don't you? You know, it's the season of eggs and all of that good stuff, rabbits and daffodils and other Easter baskets and all those related hot cross buns. I love a hot cross bun. All of those various Easter related things, which is great. And Norwich City, of course, in action twice over this weekend, which is great as well. 1-0, or 2-1, sorry, win over Plymouth, and then a trip to Leicester as well. Hopefully I've filled enough time for the lads to think of a Bring the Heat option. Sam, let's start with you this week. Who brought the heat for you today in that game?
I'm going to go for Jack Stacey because I think he's probably the best performer on the afternoon that we haven't mentioned yet. Had another very good game, and I think he's had a very, very good 2 or 3 months or so, especially with Sarah in this sort of inside right role. And I know Norwich didn't, well, I think they were 1-0 behind when Sarah actually dropped into that deeper midfield role, so obviously Fastnacht could go out on the right. But when Sarah does play that role, it gives Stacey a lot of work to do. Obviously, from a defensive point of view, when they lose the ball, Sarah tends to be in a central position, so when that transition starts, he's the one on the right. And then from an offensive perspective, you have similarly Sarah wanting to go inside and interact on that sense, which gives him less of an option to interact with than maybe he has with some of the other wingers that he's played with on the right this season. So I think he's been given more work with Sarah in that role, even though I actually do like Sarah in that role. But the amount of output he's produced and the quality of performances he's produced hasn't really dropped for me at all. Gets through a lot of work, definitely dealt defensively better with things, I think, than the left side of the Norwich defence or the Norwich team did today. And just a player I think deserves a lot of credit for the last few months. And yeah, another good performance today.
Paddy Davitt?
I think I'll just go with a collective, bit of a lazy one, but only in the context of, and he referenced it after the game, and he was very clear, you know, pre-match, I'm talking about David Wagner, pre-match, the whole Plymouth backdrop, and they just wanted whatever his terminology was on Thursday, was it? Wednesday, sorry, when he did his pre-match, which was, you know, clearly with the events down at Home Park, they wanted to project the best face of themselves, but he was, you know, it was quite clear after the game today that freed of the requirements to try and just focus in on the result. I think he used words like desperate to set the record straight, and clearly was a huge motivating factor, you know, because professionally that those players, David Wagner, those coaches, they'd have been embarrassed by the manner of that capitulation at Plymouth, you know, 4 goals down at half-time against the newly promoted team was probably the lowest point of the season on the pitch. So today, and then of course he had fresh adversity and the same player really that was their thorn in their side at Home Park, Morgan Whittaker, puts Plymouth 1-0 up to dredge that out. I thought, you know, of these 7 home wins, that's probably as deep as they've had to go. I mean, you could look at the Sunderland was a bit of a grind, and they dug out a 1-0 win. Watford, in its way, was the kind of the right reply from Wagner that night to the barbs about his in-game substitution. So there was adversity they had to overcome in that particular game to get the win. But of all those 7 wins for me in the league since Southampton New Year's Day, today felt the deepest they had to dig, because it didn't feel for an hour after Whittaker's goal that it was really going to come for them today. It wasn't really going to be their day. So pulling those strands together, the sort of the Plymouth reverse fixture element, and also how deep they had to pull that result out of today, I think, everybody should take a bow.
Do you know what? Lovely. I just remembered something, yeah. While we're on a Coleman's-related subject, yeah. I feel like there was a time when the Coleman's connection started that we were thinking of all our best Coleman's products, yeah. I tried a new one last week. Ooh, this is all free, by the way. I haven't been paid extra to say this. But they do like a kebab powder thing that, like, if you put it on like chicken or corn in my household, then it, like, obviously you cook it and it tastes like kebab stuff. Oh, it's amazing. I love a kebab. I love a kebab so, so much. And now I can take it home thanks to Coleman's.
All right, Luke Littler. Honestly, dear me. I'm going. Brilliant, brilliant plug, of course. And we are grateful for Coleman's support as ever. I'm going to go for, this is a bit harsh, I'm going to go for Adam Forshaw, just because I think it's quite impressive to play for two teams and to having lost, you know, both of the games for each of the team. Sorry, Adam. I guess if you want to be positive, you can give it to Andy Hughes, who, you know, as we said in the first part of the show is taking a lot of plaudits tonight for all of the various set piece wonders that Norwich City have whipped up this season. So there you go. There's two from me. So there we go. I did want to move on and speak a little bit about what's happened this week, Paddy, because it's been eventful. It's been maybe a slightly busier international break than we anticipated. Last week, you obviously, and we spoke about this on the podcast, and this was our top six podcast, wasn't it, about the fact that we had an interview with Stuart Webber coming. It was wide-ranging. It was on lots of topics. It was on, you know, some reflections on there about his time at Norwich City. There was obviously a bit about his upcoming bid to climb Mount Everest, which is the hook for the reason you spoke to him, because it's the reason he's going away pretty soon to do that. Obviously, there's one quote in question, and I won't, I don't need to read it again, and everyone will be aware of what I'm talking about when I mention that. And it's obviously had a lot of attention and a lot of commentary and lots of comments on it and whatnot. As we sit here, it's not quite a week on from when it was published, but it's close enough. How do you reflect on everything that's kind of happened this week?
Well, look, I mean, there was a lot of different opinions on what is an incredibly emotive discussion point. You know, anytime you're talking about race or ethnicity or inequality, discrimination in any sense, not just filtered through, you know, our sort of Norwich City worldview of it all, then, of course, you know, it's a powerful societal fault line in many ways. And I would think that wherever you are on the spectrum of this particular episode, what we all would agree is that, you know, that comment is unacceptable, it's inexcusable, and as a result, you know, quite rightly, the reaction was as it was. And for me, it's those five players that you referenced and their families and those closest to them who, through no fault of their own, were placed in that position and had to deal with that. So they're the ones who, all through this, I've felt for, basically, that they had to confront that and be subjected to that, and the ones closest to them. But, you know, what I would say, I mean, obviously that was Saturday last week, and it was obviously clearly, you know, that Saturday, Sunday, very raw, very emotional, a lot of powerful stuff on social media particularly. But in the days that followed, I felt that there was, you know, maybe where in that initial space there was clearly going to be no context or nuance really afforded to his comments, which were, as you say, Connor, essentially a piece about, you know, a guy climbing Mount Everest, and off the back of that, you know, trying to raise awareness and funds for a charity in Norfolk with his wife that they created over 2 years ago to improve life chances for young people and maybe young people who've had some challenging things to deal with in their background. And that was essentially the context to those comments. And I think in the days that passed, you know, two spring to mind, there was obviously when we put that piece out, he then clearly spoke to a journalist for the Sunday Times, Jonathan Norcroft, who did a piece on Sunday, follow-up piece. But then he, I think, two or three days later, so at the start of this week now, he did a very good thread, I thought, on X, and really just tried to, you know, get away from the, you know, the labelling and obviously everything that goes with anything that's, you know, deemed to be of a racist, offensive matter, and just tried to sort of, you know, add some layers of understanding and context, and not absolving anybody or seeking to shift blame or, you know, make excuses, but just placed maybe those comments in a broader context. And then I thought Simon Jordan was very good on Wednesday afternoon. He was on his TalkSport slot, did a piece with the Kick It Out Chairman. And again, I thought he made some very valid points, which were, you know, maybe a counterpoint to where we were sort of Saturday when they first came out. But as I say, you know, clearly nobody, I don't think, would argue that those comments were unacceptable and unforgivable. And, you know, the speed with which clearly Webber reached out to the players and the families, or at least tried to reach out, you know, that was clearly on his part, and understanding that those comments were offensive and were hurtful. And, And that's all I'd say on that. And obviously from where we come in, where I come in, where we come in as a brand, you know, clearly we've had to reflect on other things that we could control, that we could do better. Would we do better if that happened again? Of course, you know, there's some of the timings around some of the content we put out on social around the back of, off the back of the actual story. You know, I'm sure that's something we would look at again. You know, even this point about could I have challenged him mid-interview? You know, that's something I've given some serious thought to, and you know, it's for me. I can't, and I've said this to you. I can't think of any, not even Norwich City interview, but any sporting interview at any point by any organisation where that scenario has played out, and there has been a challenge mid-interview. And what I mean by that is, you know, somebody with no previous history of any either implied or overtly discriminatory comments in that area, then in the middle of an interview coming out with something of that nature and then being challenged. I can't think of anything. That's not to excuse me or us as an organisation, but I think it was a completely unique scenario, really, if I'm honest. And so it's all well and good, you know, with hindsight and post looking at it, particularly when, quite rightly, you know, that comment is pulled out of what was essentially an hour sit down and a, you know, one of two or three very long read pieces, and that's just facts. That's not mitigation or excuses. That's just the fact of the matter. So yes, of course, we will reflect on all those elements, but essentially, you know, those words have been reported fairly accurately and in full context, I might add as well, and we were the only media who did that. You know, subsequently, a lot of media organisations picked up on that comment and didn't place it within the broader context of what he was trying to talk about. And that, again, isn't to absolve him of his words or what he said or the hurt or the impact they would have had on the individuals he named. But I think context is relevant. And we were the only organisation who, to my mind, have, you know, quite clearly carried that in a manner that how he put those words across, you know, in their entirety. So, yeah, not great for us as an organisation to have to deal with, or me as an individual, and we'll clearly reflect on those matters. But as I say, you know, it's that's by the by. This is an episode that, you know, just reaffirms again, you know, that as a society, you know, we all have a responsibility. And you know, it was, you know, within two or three days after sort of the interventions I referenced from Norcroft and Jordan, you've then got, you know, Brazil's Vinicius Junior, he's breaking down in a press conference over in Spain because he's being asked again about the serial racism that he's subjected to in a lot of grounds when he plays for Real Madrid. And, you know, that just underlines again that, you know, this is something that we all have to confront, really. And he's with us, and it's not just a part of football. It's not football's problem. It's society's problem as well. So, you know, yeah, not a great episode to have to have any part in. But ultimately, for me, the thoughts in both in the immediate aftermath and now was with those players, really, and their families, and you know, having to be subjected to that, because you know, it can't have been very pleasant for anybody involved.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's worth saying as well, and obviously I'm not going to go into depth into various things, but we have spoken to some of the players involved, some of the players' camps involved, some of the players' families involved as well. You know, I'm not afraid to admit it. I've found it very tough this week, to be honest, at various points, and you know, I probably wanted just to go to a beach and turn my phone off and lob it in the sea at various points. It's not been easy, and it's never nice when you end up in that type of situation, because like you said, I think you end up reflecting on what you could have done or what maybe you should have done or how it played out and whatnot, and it's very difficult. And I'm acutely aware as well that, you know, we've done a podcast like this every game, and our content as well more broadly, and you know, it's us three today, and we're all white males, and Adam as well, so that would be four. But every time that, you know, we walk in, or I walk into a press room, or we walk into a press room, I think, you know, I'm very conscious of what that environment is a lot of the time, which is, you know, usually not always, and it's increasingly not the case, which is good to see, but it's still I think if you took everyone in a press room, in a press box, you would find that there were more white males than there were anybody else. And it's good now to see, obviously, a lot more females involved in this industry. And that goes with management and coaching and playing as well. So, yeah, it's been a really difficult week, and it's obviously not something that necessarily I wanted to dwell on in huge ways. But I think it is worth saying that and talking about it, because it's clearly something that's happened. And I think as well, it's worth saying I thought Abu Kamara's statement on the whole affair was incredible for a young man. And obviously these people have teams and they have people that work for them, but for him to write a statement in the way that he did and get across what he did, I thought was incredibly impressive. And you know, he's obviously matching that with some unbelievable stuff on the pitch as well. So yeah, there we go. We'll leave that there. But I think we've spoken about it, and there's obviously been a lot of opinions and commentary and whatnot on us and on other aspects as well. So there we go. I thought it was just important that we touched upon it. Sam, if we look ahead to the next week for Norwich City, I mean, we've kind of teed it up, but Leicester on Monday, Ipswich on Saturday, that is that's big, isn't it?
It's absolutely huge. I think the Ipswich game has almost made the Leicester game feel a little bit smaller. But you look at that, and it's a good team, but it's also a team that's really in a period of suffering at the moment, and a team that probably Norwich will feel, although they won't go in as favourites, and it won't be a disastrous result if they lose that game, they'll go into it definitely feeling like it's an opportunity. You know, with seven games left, it's a decent percentage of now their push to try and get into the playoffs. So against a big team at maybe one of the better stadiums in the Championship, and with a lot of eyes on it, that does feel like a really big game that's actually almost being forgotten about and brushed aside before it's even happened, because of the magnitude of obviously the game that follows it just 5 days later. But I'm sure we're all looking forward to the derby. I've spoken to a lot of fans today that already, okay, you're not looking forward to it, but I know you know how big it is, and you know what a big occasion it is. I've spoken to a lot of fans today that are already thinking about it, and yeah, I'm maybe more excited than you are, but I don't think you can deny the magnitude of it. Obviously, Ipswich are in fantastic form. Norwich are in fantastic form themselves. It's at Carrow Road, where Norwich have been especially good in the last few weeks. And this looks like maybe being one of the highest quality East Anglian derbies there's been for a really long time. It feels like they shook a little bit of the nerves and the apprehension maybe in that game in December. And should be a very good game, but also a huge game for Norwich's playoff ambitions, because the psychological impacts of potentially losing that game and losing a 15-year unbeaten record at Carrow Road against your biggest rivals, I think that would be a huge blow going into the last five games of a season which obviously still is very much in the balance, and Norwich are very close to reaching their goal. So, yeah, huge for both teams. It looks like Norwich might even be the only team left that can really knock Ipswich off course in terms of automatic promotion. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to both games. It feels like there's a lot less pressure on Norwich going into this Leicester one. But, yeah, I think that's understandable, because we all know the magnitude of these East Anglian derbies, especially at Carrow Road, you know, around this city. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people talking about it, looking forward to it, and it should be an unbelievable atmosphere. But, yeah, make no mistake about it, Norwich pretty much must get a result to please a lot of the people here, because yeah, if they lose that game, I think that could be quite a significant blow. But I'm not going to be negative. I think it's an opportunity to really boost themselves psychologically, to put everyone in a really positive frame of mind for those five games. And then if they do end up in the playoffs and they've already beaten the team that they face, which is obviously very possible if they do win that game, and they've avoided defeat against them for 15 years, that would put them in a fantastic psychological position. So I think maybe more psychologically resting on that one than there is points-wise, but yeah, an enormous week for Norwich's promotion hopes, and good that they go into it with so much momentum and confidence.
And a points cushion as well. I mean, that is another benefit of today, really. That they've given themselves, they've taken the pressure off, because that's the wrong word, but they've given themselves a little bit of wiggle room now, not to maybe necessarily need the points that they would have if they would have lost this game. And obviously some of that has been impacted because Hull lost today and West Brom drew. So it's just maybe taken, it has taken a little bit of the pressure off, for want of a better word. I am reopening Operation Just Don't Lose for next weekend, Operation JDL, as it's known. I would sign, and maybe this is every derby, I'd just sign for a draw and get the thing done now, to be honest. But Paddy, I'd broaden it out, because I know there's obviously going to be a lot of attention on these next two, for obvious reasons, because of the particularly because one's a derby and that's always massive, irrespective of the context, but because they're against two automatic promotion chasing teams, which could, by the way, then these two next games could actually be a run of the playoffs, if that's so. That could be another kind of subcontext to bear in mind. But I actually brought it out to the next four. Norwich have three of their next four games away from home. Sheffield Wednesday and Preston obviously come after Ipswich. We've spoken a lot about that away record, and obviously they've beaten Stoke now, so we hope that's going to be that particular monkey off their back. But it feels to me, and this is just to me, I don't know if you agree, maybe I'm asking if you agree, but feels to me like these four games feel pretty, I don't want to say, they're not definitive, of course, but they feel pretty important, I think, and they all do. But I just think if they can get to the end of these four games and still be in the top six, I think that's the point where I'll go from they might do it to they can do it.
You were a bit more definitive than that at the final whistle. I think I was more of that opinion. You said it's more or less a done deal. I'm paraphrasing, but I see that. I mean, but again, go back to the last show we had, and for me, as I was looking down that hours-long discussion about fixtures and run-ins and respective, I just couldn't get past this swing now. You know, Leicester away, Ipswich home, and maybe that's just because of the magnitude of the two fixtures, particularly the second one of the two. And if they navigate those two and they're still in a healthy position, i.e. where they are now, then by no manner of means am I saying thereafter it's a formality, but it would feel that they would have, you know, that renewed kind of, not that they need it, but belief about them that, you know, if you've emerged unscathed, define unscathed, but certainly not lost over the next two, then you've got to feel, you know, you're in a good frame of mind over and above anything and out of your control, i.e. heaven forbid an injury now to a key player, that you could roll on those two you mentioned. Obviously, there's then two games, I think, to finish at home, isn't there, and then they go to Birmingham on the final weekend. So, yeah, no, I'd be fairly confident, just because maybe it's a psychological element, because if the opposite was true and, you know, it doesn't quite go as anybody connected to Norwich would want in these next two games, you know, that's, and one of those is clearly an Ipswich and all the historical baggage that comes with that over the last 15 years, then does that have a really major psychological dent? You know, we won't know, time will tell, but it's not something I don't think David Wagner would want to have to contemplate, that he would be metaphorically picking players up from having, you know, been the first group to lose a derby in 14 or 15 years. I know, yeah. So, never mind the fan base. So, you know, just keeping that level head. And he reiterated it again today, you know, when I put it to him. Well, you've almost dragged West Brom into it now by them not winning at Millwall and you doing the business. And it was just, and it sounded like he'd repeated that mantra in the dressing room this afternoon after the game, that what's gone is gone, and it's just stay in the moment, don't get carried away, don't worry about the permutations. Very hard to do, I guess, when you've got Leicester and then Ipswich back to back, but they need to, and that's, again, increasingly, it feels like in the last two or three games, increasingly, the influence of a Duffy, the influence of a McLean, the influence of a Barnes in that dressing room, Angus Gunn maybe now as a senior figure, is invaluable, because it would be easy to get whipped and carried along with the kind of all the emotional baggage that goes with certainly the Ipswich game, but even, you know, going to Leicester now, who are a team who are, you know, clearly in the mix for the top two. But you just think with the experience core that is in this group of players now that won't happen, and that, you know, they've been there, they've seen it, they've done it, they know what's required. And again, today, that was, you know, maybe if that was a younger group of players or an inexperienced group of players, they don't get back in that game. You know, they don't just hang in there, just keep plugging away, hope, knowing that if they keep doing the same things, putting the ball in the right areas as they did on them set pieces, something will drop. And that's that, just that intangible, which they clearly have in this group of players, because they have had adversity all this season at various points and blocks of games, and yet here we are now, seven to play, and they've got a 4-point cushion to seventh place, albeit Coventry have a game in hand. So, you know, that for me is probably what I'll draw on going into these two games, that, you know, you have players who can handle what will, quite clearly against the quality of opponent they're coming up to in the next two games, there will be periods where it doesn't go for them in these games, and maybe they're on the back foot, maybe they concede a goal, and how will they react? And I think today was a good reminder, if it was needed, that, you know, if they find themselves in one of those tight spots, that they've got something about them, this group, that you think they can galvanise themselves and produce a result. So, yeah, it's all about the next two for me, if I'm honest, Connor. I think if they could emerge from this next two, ideally unbeaten, but probably more so in as good a position as they're in now, you know, Preston, of course, you know, they will have something to say about it when they go to Deepdale, but yeah, you would have taken that run in from that point, I think, with those final five fixtures. I think we'd have all taken that. If you're already have your destiny in your own hands in terms of you're already in the top six, and it's the others who have to play catch up now to overhaul you.
And if they do lose to Ipswich, we're just going to have four pictures of Grant Holt here next week. I'm not going to show up. So from these two games, because we might do a pre-Ipswich pod, I think that's still up for debate. We'll see how it goes, and how next week pans out and whatnot. But 6 points on offer, Paddy. I guess there's two questions here. How many will they get? How many do they need to get?
That's tough, mate. That's tough. How many do they need to get? Yeah. Well, you'd probably be saying you'd want three, I would think. So, three. Lose at Leicester, which, you know, it's not helped by the fact they've got beat at Bristol today. And I don't know how, obviously, we're recording this while Ipswich were leading.
They've won, yeah.
Great. and obviously, probably before Leeds kick off at Watford, but there's a potential that they're going to be out of the two, aren't they? I think they will be out of the two, then, if Ipswich have won, won't they? So that only heightens their need to get a result on Monday. So, yeah, three they need, three they'll get.
Sam?
I agree that they need three. I think it has to be against Ipswich as well. But I actually think they're at four. I've just got a feeling. I've watched Leicester.
Which way round?
I think they'll beat Leicester and then draw against Ipswich. I've seen Leicester and they just look really poor. They look like they're susceptible.
I've not been that hot on Leicester all season.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even more so in recent weeks, they look like they've been impacted by a lack of confidence, by the fact that it's the run-in, by the loss of form that they've experienced, and the fact that they were seemingly nailed on for promotion and are now actually part of the chasing pack. And I think Norwich are pretty decent at spoiling the party and getting results against teams that are in and around them or even above them. So, yeah, this feeling has only really developed in the last 5 or 10 minutes. But I just, as of right now, I've got a feeling they'll beat Leicester. And first of all, I do genuinely think they'll avoid defeat against Ipswich. And even in my head, I'm thinking that. But also, the heart couldn't even handle predicting a loss against Ipswich. So, I think 4 points.
Need three, get two. I think that's how I'm going to go. Two draws, and whether that's going to be enough to keep them in the top six come next weekend, we shall see. That seems like an apt place to wrap it up. Gents, thank you very much for your time. Thank you all very much for watching, stroke listening. And if you do know the answer to the question, whatever's happened to Mark Tierney, then please do let us know. Of course, like, share, all of that good stuff. And we will see you very, very soon, either pre or post East Anglia Derby in Ipswich Town. Enjoy your Easter. See you soon.